Okay, welcome everyone to the July 6, 2023 Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee meeting. And would the clerk kindly call the roll?
Chairman Joe Green?
Present.
Deputy Chair Gina Hansett?
Present.
Legislator Eric Stewart?
Here, thank you.
Legislator Aaron Levine? And Legislator Joe Maloney
is here. Not here yet, but is expected.
And Chair and Chair Tracy Bartels
here.
Okay, and let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Anybody want to volunteer to start?
Sure.
The United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And then, have folks had a chance to look at the minutes from June 1st? I'd like to entertain a motion on the minutes. So moved?
So moved.
I'll second that.
Okay. So on the approval of the June 1st minutes, all in favor, please signify. Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? And we have enough people to approve the minutes. We have a quorum.
Glad you're here.
So we're going to go right to the resolutions and then do the committee reports, and hopefully, but there is one resolution we will hold. So the first resolution is confirming appointment and to the UCRRA board. And before we, it's a TBA, to be announced, but before we do that, I would like to, two people are not here, maybe we'll wait till they get here, but I want to set a time for interviews. But for now, our folks comfortable with moving forward in terms of setting a resolution that we would fill in after the interviews.
First of all, let me say that we've gotten a few requests, a few resumes in, I would hardly call it robust at this point. I also want to say that, I've spoken with the existing board members and members of this committee. Like, I think what's most important at this moment, in general, but especially at this moment, is, is that we put the right people, not just people. One position is basically for 6 months. And one position is basically for a year and a half. One ends at the end of this year, one term ends at the end of next year. All of the RA appointments are chair appointments, and both of these are straight chair appointments, not requiring the minority recommendation. I definitely would like the committee to interview candidates. I'm looking to do some further outreach to get potentially to get other candidates to be interviewed so that there is a more robust group. And I also think there's a couple ways to look at the 6 month position, which we can talk about when we undertake the interviews. I don't know if what you're suggesting is that your intention is to have the interviews before session, and then we plug it in on session day, it feels a little tight, because when you're saying to move it forward, again, I hate to have
the week.
An extra month, but it's like it's really going to probably take an extra month. It's probably going to take an extra month.
Because we only have 1 week.
Exactly. Two weeks till session, right? Because next week is what it means, first week means, right, session is on 18th. I also want to be clear, I know the press, I think the press isn't here, but for the purpose of the press, I have spoken with members of the press that it's the reason it's to be determined was that I wanted to get it in for the discussion as soon as the vacancies existed, but that the legislature and definitely this committee and me are all committed to transparency. We're not trying to slip in, a board member without anybody knowing. The press was concerned that it says to be determined, and I said, you're going to have the names, we don't yet have the names, you're going to know at the same time that we know.
And there's not a big lineup of people.
Right. So, I do think there'll be more to talk about in relation to the RRA in terms of the other resolution that I put in for discussion, which I'll just state right now, I have no expectation for it to move this month. It's the beginning of an important discussion that we have to have about the future makeup of the board. So all that is to say, I'm not sure what you were just asking. Chair Green was that were you going to pass it with the TBD and then slot a name later?
Well, I wouldn't call it slide it in, but we
no,
would
slot.
Slot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, yes.
And we've done that before. My concern is that the resignations that created these vacancies were several months ago, and I believe that part of the reason an agency board meeting was canceled is to try to bring on the new people for doing the business of the agency moving forward. So I was hoping that we had enough response that we could use the process that we've used in the past, which is to have a special meeting, do the interviews, and then select the candidates to recommend to the chair, and then to move, at session. That was my intention, but if the will of the committee is that we need more time, we do not need to act this month.
So, and I'll defer to the committee. I mean, I think that we can do that. We can move it, see if we can schedule interviews, see if there are recommendations to be made or other people that come forward that could be interviewed. And if not, it can always be referred back to committee. That's possible too. I feel not overly optimistic about filling two slots in this moment in time. And I'm not saying to just move one. I'm just saying I'm grounding us in reality that I don't think we're going to fill two slots in 2 weeks. Feeling that what's most critical is that we find the right people, not any people. You know, like that. I appreciate the sense of rush, which is why I put this in immediately. But it's challenging, and unfortunately, I know it came at a. I know that the resignations came a couple months ago, but this is probably the worst time to be looking for board members because summer is the hardest time. Just to people aren't. I don't know. People are away. They're doing their own thing, so it's harder. We see a drop in submissions for all committees in the summer. Like it's the time we see the least response. So that's unfortunate too. But what I would ask all the members of this committee, if you haven't done it already, to really be thinking if there's anybody that you know that you think would be you know, appropriate or good or the right people, just even to recommend those names as well and encourage them to apply, but you know, have them reach out to me or to Lori directly, and so that we can include them in the interview process as well.
I was just going to say that I've been approached by two different people who would like to serve on the committee. Unfortunately, both of these people are elected officials.
Oh, yes.
So until we address your resolution, they would really not be appropriate.
Yeah. So. Anybody else?
Well, in terms of just logistically, I would say right now we're working with on a board that's supposed to have five members. We're at three right now, right? So we need everybody there just to have a quorum to conduct business. So I would say if we have at least, you know, if there's, I'm not saying I think it's important to do both of these appointments at the same time. If we have one that we think is a good fit, I would say it's a good idea, I think, to move forward with one, just so that we can get a fourth member on the board, so that in case somebody doesn't show up, we can still have quorum to have business conducted. Because I think right now it's in a situation where it's very perilous. I'm not opposed to filling one at a time if that is the committee's view on it as well.
And the other, functionally, the other way that you could deal with it is to take no action, have a meeting where you do the interviews. If you come to an agreement on a recommendation, which I would definitely want to be at that meeting as well. I've been at all of those meetings, when I was chair or not chair, but I would critically want to be at that meeting. If there is a consensus that we all reach, then you could hold a special meeting in order to move the resolution. That's another way to do it. You could hold a special meeting in order to move the resolution prior to session.
Well, setting up a special meeting takes everybody, you know, being here. So if we're going to go that route, wait till Joe gets here, but
if you're going to have the special meeting to do the interviews, is what I'm saying.
To do the interviews.
So it could be at that same meeting.
Yep. And that's why I'd like to set it while we're here. And but on the other hand, I really do hear your concern about maybe we do need more time. I do want to say that June is better than, for advertising, is better than July, is better than August. And so we really can't wait till September.
I don't think it's going to be advertising. I think it's going to be direct outreach. Yeah.
So yeah, inviting
much
people.
More aggressive,
yeah.
Sort of solicitation.
I've had various people call me, and that's what I say is, can you think of somebody that would be good, and please reach out. I'm not reaching out to anybody because as chair of the committee, it doesn't feel like that's the right action. I do really want to encourage people. Do you want to wait? Oh, I'm sorry.
No worries.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, since we have Director Olivier here, I thought maybe he might be able to perhaps give some insight as to what hardships, if any, this is causing his organization not having a functioning board.
Okay. I'm just wondering if we want to get through these resolutions, but I'm wondering if we should just bring that report up and do that report and get that out of the way and have that conversation and then come back and go through the resolution.
I think that would work.
You're okay. Everyone's okay.
Yeah.
With
you good, Anna?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you mind?
Can you get my report first?
And please come a little closer because of my hearing.
Okay.
And I'll turn it all the way up.
Would you like for me to answer that question from
yes.
Mr. Stewart first? So my understanding is, and I don't want to speak for my board, but I would just tell you that my understanding of their perspective on this right now, our board chair is sitting here, so I can be corrected if I'm wrong, is that they don't want to make any major decisions, like having to do with the landfill siting or having to do with future operations, how we might, you know, create some better mousetrap for diversion there before the two are appointed, because they feel like that'd be unfair to them to have this decided before they walk through if somebody's going to be. That's kind of their concern, my understanding of their concern, at least some of the board members, maybe not all three. But I think to answer your question specifically about hardship, I do believe that the three that we have are willing and capable to take care of our ongoing normal business. They're just trying to avoid the bigger picture things that are more long-term planning and bigger project things. So I think as far as, you know, a resolution to purchase some equipment or apply for grant funding or something like that, they're going to take care of that and as we bring it to them and stuff. And I think the meeting that was postponed or I guess canceled the last time, it was we really didn't have any resolutions for them to make any decisions, and we weren't going to address any of the larger picture items that I mentioned. So it was decided by one that, hey, how are we doing this if we have nothing to really act on? We're just going to be there to be there, and that was kind of the feeling by that one individual. So so I do think the board is able to function the way it is for our basics and to help keep us moving forward. We're just not going to get the big stuff done until you guys get the other two in there. So I think taking your time is a good idea. Get the right people in there, because we do have some very important big decisions to be made in the future. So
great. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you.
And while you have the floor, one of those big picture items is the landfill siting update, and so that's pretty much on
it's
hold.
It's on hold. Yes,
yeah.
We've just kind of stopped moving forward at this point.
Is there any news on waste diversion C&D?
So I can give you some numbers. I will tell you a few things I would like to let your committee know. First of all, planning on having a very robust presence at the fair this year for diversion. We're going to have at least 70 of our containers out around the fairgrounds for collection of commingled recycling and for organics collection. So we're also going to be giving individual containers to all the food vendors and asking them to recycle their food scraps with us, and I'll be collecting those personally every day from them in the morning. So
that's great.
The fairgrounds is in between my house and my office, so I'm going to stop through there and pick everything up for taking to work with me every day. So we're going to be out there. We're going to have a booth. We're going to be working with the nonprofit booth on the environmental row. We're going to try to help cover for them if they run short on volunteers and help. And we're going to push as many of our programs and services as we can. We're really going to highlight our website and all the information that's on there, because we find that it just doesn't get utilized enough. So we're going to really try not to hand out things that are going to end up in the recycling or in the trash. We're going to try to minimize what we hand out at the booth, because I feel like we shouldn't be contributing to the problem that we're trying to solve. So doing that. As far as I have May's numbers, if you want them from our recycling diversion and stuff, I don't have June's yet, so I apologize. But to give you a total amount of 7,100 tons was recycled through our MRF and stuff. Out of that, 99 tons was commingled material. paper was 58 tons. Cardboard 175, food waste 478 tons. So we're seeing a little bit of tonnage coming from Kingston and from the county's programs for our food waste, so that's good. They're starting to pick up a little bit and work, so we're happy about that. So those are some of the diversion numbers. I have more detail if anybody wanted it specific on anything specific. As far as MSW that came in, we had 12,400 tons of MSW come in. That is 826 tons less than what we estimated would be in at this time of the year. We diverted 129 of those tons from our floor, from our tipping floor and stuff. So we managed to stop that. So that's some of the numbers for us and stuff as far as recycling and waste goes.
Just specifically in terms of what might need to be done to make the ability for the town transfer stations to separate C&D. Is there any problem?
So happy you ask.
Pardon?
I've been working on that. That's something I'm working on right now. So there's two things that I'm working on right now. One, I'm working on ever so slowly, unfortunately. I've got a lot on my plate, so I am not making great progress, but I am making progress. I'm working on getting us permitted so that our trucks can haul commercial waste, first of all, which will open the door to us being able to go, hey, you guys at the transfer stations, if you want to take in C&D, you don't have to worry about whether it's from a commercial or a residential person, and we can haul it legally and we'll be fine. Then it'd be a matter of giving them the bins, individual bins, for them to put that in. The problem is that I don't really have any place to take C&D, so even if I do this, it's going to come and get what? I don't have a way to really do a good job of sorting through it because I don't have a facility for that. So what I'm doing is I'm currently trying to work with a local, this is a county over, processor of C&D, and we're trying to see what that might look like if we're able to get it collected, source separated at the different transfer stations, what that would look like to get it processed through their system and get the diversion that we want out of it. So.
And which county is that, or is that top secret right now?
No, it's Orange County. Yeah.
Okay, and all of this really needs to be fleshed out and embodied in a zero waste implementation plan, and hopefully we'll find a way to move that forward.
Thank you. On the I really appreciate that you're taking that initiative with C&D and even partnering with an existing provider of that service is great, but I wonder, is the agency on any level, are there any discussions about considering creating an agency system?
Yes, but unfortunately that's going to come with that bigger picture that we're talking about, because when we talk about trying to create greater diversion at UCRA, we need to look at things like a modern MRF for running all the single stream in the county, because the majority of it is collected as single stream. We really need to have a location locally for that to come to where we really know it's being taken care of in the proper manner and maximize the diversion. The same with the C&D. We really do need to have a way to deal with it locally, but it's kind of part of when you start looking at building that mousetrap, do you build it one little piece at a time, or do you go, here's the big vision, and how much of it can we get built it all in kind of one big movement towards our end goal? So
I just want to say, you know, for the record, that both of those conversations, the upgrading of the MRF, which is obvious, I mean, I've been here 16 years with four off in the middle, so 20 years, there's been no change to the MRF in that time, to my knowledge.
And it shows.
And the concept of having a C&D facility, which should come with a discussion potentially of flow control of C&D. That's something we started the discussion of years ago. And we didn't actually give up the discussion. Legislator Green will acknowledge, you know, in adopting flow control of municipal solid waste, there were many of us at the time who were adamant that we were supportive of adopting that legislation in terms of it was largely a fiscal argument, but that we saw it as just one piece of the puzzle and that we really had to get to a whole system which included C&D and recycling. So I'm just thrilled to hear that there's even the beginnings of a conversation of this at the agency, because I think that on some level the issues surrounding the fiscal sustainability and the then net service fee and the need to, for the county to have no net service fee achieved through flow control resulted in the agency forestalling any real discussion of improvement. And improvement costs money, but it's necessary. It's critical. So, you know, people hear me talking about landfill a lot, but these things are just as important. So I'm really happy to hear that these conversations are starting, and we need to get you the people, we need to get Andy the people on the board. But
And I would just offer for that I think that fortunately with my experience, I do know how to make these systems pay for themselves. I've done that. And so I think, yes, it takes an investment of dollars to get there, but you can, if done correctly, make that investment pay for itself. Therefore, we don't have to continue to raise rates and you know, create this situation where more of it goes on the side of the road than comes to us, because now people don't want to pay the fees. So it's something that we have to be mindful of. And I think there is a balance, and I've spent a lot of time in the private sector having to figure out how to make that work, and in the public sector. So I think there's a way we do that, and it's just a matter of getting there, and we can. It's just, but it's gonna take some open minds and some willing, and to be honest with you, just some willingness to follow, because some folks are just gonna have to trust and follow a little bit that we're on the right path and we're trying to do the right thing. So
thank you. Just on the response to the request for statements of interest, that's also a big ticket item that.
Yeah, that's right at the heart of what we were just talking about with the MRF and stuff, because quite frankly, some of these people who have responded, part of what they are responding with is, what if we built a MRF and got everything out that isn't already being source separated out first, and then put it through, you know, get the organics out, and then just kind of like a you know, complete system. So even with one of them saying, hey, we need to attack C&D as well as the organics, so, you know, that's part of what they want to propose and talk about. So that's those, hitting on those issues once we get there.
Okay. Any other? Yes, please.
Would it be appropriate for us to send out an email to our colleagues in the legislature with possible names, because I mean, it's great for us in this room, but there's only, you know, five of us here.
For possible, asking them.
Yeah, asking them if they know somebody. I mean, that way we're spread out a little bit, and you know, just a simple email.
Yeah, I mean, we can do. You know, I can ask Lori to write up an email that could come from me and the committee, so come from the chair and the committee on behalf of the.
Sometimes it's just
committee.
A little spark that, like,
yeah.
You know, oh,
yeah.
Maybe.
If the committee, I can go ahead and do that. Seems like
is that okay, Manna?
Yeah,
all
I
right.
think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to take action to do that. It would just
no.
do
no,
that.
No, I'll go.
Thank you.
That's a great idea.
And I was going to say, if that doesn't work, we could also write a letter to the town supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't hurt to CC. The chair is Mike.
The
supervisor.
Yeah, let him.
Yeah. And so that he can. And do you sometimes go to those meetings?
I haven't been. I
actually would like to, and I was going to reach out and try and find out when the next one is. It's around the corner.
It's usually on. Like it's usually on session day. That's part of the problem. It's really early, and it's session day, and then session day goes really long. I've did it a couple times. It's just made the day.
Welcome. And for the record, Legislator Maloney just joined us and is present now. And we had a quick report from the UCRA and have been discussing how to move forward
to fill the vacancy.
Okay.
And the suggestion was made to reach out to our colleagues on the legislature, but also to CC the Association of Town Supervisors and Mayors, just to see if they know people. And I think, did you have something else?
Just one last thing, if I may.
Yes,
I'm going to make a plug for our booth at the fair by saying that it, you're not already volunteering in some capacity at the fair in a booth, and you, or you know somebody that isn't that might be interested, I'm looking for as many people as possible that might be willing to help out at our booth, and who will also, if needed, help out with the nonprofits booth, which will be set up next to them. So we're going to cover for them if need be. So just my plug, if anybody isn't already working in a booth, we only ask for 2 hours at a time.
I'm going to just clarify that and check this item off the agenda as well, and that is that the Climate Smart Committee is again in partnership with, I think it's New Yorkers for Clean Power, there's going to be a nonprofit booth and a Climate Smart Committee booth adjacent, so it'll be like Climate Row, and there'll be lots of education, a crossword puzzle that'll get people going to different vendors and booths to gather information so they can fill out the crossword puzzle and come back and get a raffle ticket and so forth. We've done it for the last couple of years. I think it's been very effective, needed more than ever, and we will be cooperating with the Department of Environment, who will provide a new map of which Climate Smart Committee task force exists and who's taken the pledge and who's silver and gold and brass and whatever the other metals are. Anyway, we are looking for volunteers, and legislators are most welcome to volunteer. It's 4-hour shifts, and I think we need to fill 37 with at least two people.
Great deal sounds much better.
And we're going. We're working with the interns. What is the name of that program?
The Climate Corps.
Yeah, the Climate Corps. And they'll be staffing quite a few of the shifts. So.
Yes. In fact, I saw them messing downstairs earlier.
Great. So at this point, I think we can, with a full house, we should get back to the resolutions, if everyone's okay, and then finish up the,
can you block those two?
Yeah. Okay. So thank you. Good point. On the resolutions, I'd like to have a motion to block Resolution 348 and 349, confirming appointments to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency.
I'll second that.
Okay. All right. On the motion to block, everybody in agreement? Okay. Anyone opposed? And on the resolutions, let's have a finalize that conversation. We've kind of gone full circle to come back to that.
So we are going to send a letter out to both our colleagues and to the town supervisors requesting recommendations for people who could fill these positions.
So if that's the case, do we want to take action? All we've done so far is block. Now we have to decide if we're going to take action, take no action, postpone.
I agree with your point of if we have somebody.
Especially
but we don't have a lot of time either.
Especially because it's a 6-month term, you said, right? So
yeah.
it's not a long term, it's not necessarily a long term commitment. Somebody could get onto it just see if it's something they want to continue with, and you know, if it's, they find that they don't feel it's for them, you know, at the end of the year the term is up and we can appoint somebody else, I would think so.
If we move forward and schedule a meeting and go through interviews and decide there is, you know, not enough to fill in the blanks in these TBAs, we could, Tracy,
well,
please.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, and I can just step out and confirm with Vicki, but I think if you're going to schedule, even if you don't schedule a specific date right this minute, if you postpone to the next meeting of this committee and you schedule a special meeting to conduct interviews, you could put on the agenda these resolutions at that committee meeting versus moving this to the floor and then having to refer it back with no action.
Either way, we should schedule a special meeting to at least start interviews.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you figure out the date.
Can you also, while you're going, check if there's a close date on the advertisement? When we sent out...
Yes.
So, what do we want to do with this? Did Tracy go to get something that is relevant to
the... Do you want to have a special meeting just to nominate the person for the six-month term?
A special meeting before our session this month?
Well, I guess it depends on what Tracy comes back with, so I guess we can't really.
We can hold on this discussion and move to the next.
Why don't we move on to the next resolution?
Yeah. All right. Discussion is not closed. We're just going to revisit it when the chair gets back. Resolution number 374, adopting proposed local law number 6 of 2023, a local law amending the code of the County of Ulster, chapter 131, vehicles, county, article 1, sustainable green fleet policy. In relation to strategic and goals, strategies and goals. Any discussion?
What are the
motion for discussion?
What are the changes here? Is this an executive request or is this a legislative request?
We had a public hearing on this already.
Mm-hmm.
We had a public hearing on this already. It came out of the it came out of the executive office. I sponsored it because it's I'm very, very, very supportive of it. It's amazingly aggressive. Like, they're way stepping up the implementation of the green fleet. And it's quite a lot of detail. You can see it in the local law. It's substantial changes within. I don't know if Amanda can speak to some of the more specific changes, but I was very, very happy with it.
These are self-inflicted goals, right? It's just a memorializing resolution to ourselves, more or less, that we're going to hold ourselves to.
To the extent that you would call any policy or any local law self-inflicted, I would not say it's memorializing. Okay. I mean, we fought to put goals in the first law. I co-authored the first law, and there was really pushback from the executive office at that time to have any goals included. The goals were modest, and they were exceeded fairly quickly. I would not call these goals modest. These goals are...
Hey, we have procurement policies that I believe any citizen can take us to court if we don't follow. I'm not a lawyer, but I think you can file Article 78 and but would, if we didn't achieve these goals, would we be able to, is there some kind of accountability? I don't really care. I mean, I'm just wondering how you say it's not a memorializing resolution and it's got teeth. What is the enforceability other than ourselves doing what we said we were going to do or reach our goals?
I mean, I would think if, to your example of a citizen filing an Article 78, I would imagine it would be applicable to this too. We're passing a local law.
Okay.
And for some reason, the backup doesn't, I'm pulling up the backup, but the backup is for the next.
I just got
the Golden Hill.
Another quick question about UCAT. I've had a lot of people complain recently that we're not using a lot of the electric buses. I've even talked to a couple of drivers. Is there validity to that? We've had some issues. We've sent off things to Jersey or something to get some of them fixed, but there's been a lot of electric buses parked and not being used. Is that true or not? Phil, have you heard any of that? You have?
It's a separate question.
There is a recall issue.
Amanda, speak up, please.
There is an issue with software that has not been satisfactorily resolved. We are working with the county attorney's office to engage with the vendor to ensure that it's resolved.
I mean, to me, that's part of the green fleet, no? Are these electric buses part of the green fleet?
Yeah.
The reason I bring it up is we're asked to pass these things from the executive that further become more and more aggressive with the green fleet, approving money going toward the green fleet, approving purchases for the green fleet. Then when we have issues with the green fleet, like I've heard from probation, like I'm now hearing at UCAT, we don't hear anything. Why would we not get an update that we've got grounded buses, there's software issues, the county attorney's involved? We don't ever hear these things, shouldn't we? Or no, we should just, everything's great. Approve. Does anyone see my point?
I want to just address it.
Yes, I do.
But I also think that would typically go to Public Works, even though in terms of the Green Fleet, we're being asked to approve it, but that report, and there's no reason why it shouldn't come
here.
I was at a Public Works meeting.
They just got a report on that?
Well, they discussed the fact that there's an issue with the buses, and it's a warranty issue, and the buses are under warranty, but they've been sent to be fixed.
Was it practically done, or was it a question to get to? I don't even know.
I didn't hear what you said.
Were we given a report, an update, where we sent out things? I don't know why. I'd like the whole legislature to get these things. I don't know why the whole legislature doesn't. That's a thing for the chair to start thinking about. But why don't we get the backup? I mean, if you're not on the committee, you don't get the backup ever, maybe, or until you're approving it on the floor. We should probably all get these things. But
I mean, to that point, well, what I would say is I think it was at Public Works. I'm trying to remember. I definitely did not hear it. I heard it in a public meeting where there was a discussion with legislators.
But electric buses that are part of the Green Fleet are not, we wouldn't get that. We wouldn't get that information in Energy and Environment.
I'm just telling you that I heard it at a meeting in a public forum about this warranty issue. In terms of legislators getting everything, from when I was a rank and file legislator, I asked to be on every committee's distribution list, and I got every committee's backup, and I went into the OneDrive and I read the backup for everything.
Have you passed that along to freshman legislators
if
they come in?
You've
said they should do that? Why don't we just send it all out? That's a discussion for another day.
Everybody wants to be on every distribution. Some people don't want to be on every distribution list. Some people don't want to get inundated with more mail. Some people aren't going to read. I mean, the OneDrive is available to everyone basically at all times.
So moving forward, and I agree that you said everything is on there, but that is a lot for everybody to read. Moving forward, when it is such a hot ticket item, this Green Fleet, if there's something with UCAT buses or something, can it come to our attention in this committee so that we can just be aware of it?
In terms of the green bus.
Like an issue with that the busing and the software, so that, you know, if our constituents ask us or something, that we could, it is, I feel, part of the committee.
Mm-hmm.
So just moving forward.
since we've been voting on it, we should get that information.
Yeah.
And just if I may, there are often issues with vehicles, just like that's part of operating a fleet. And for example, some of these electric buses are replacing hybrid diesel buses, which were incredibly problematic for battery systems that needed to be replaced. So there are, it is an update that can come to you, but I just want to frame it that there's often, these are often problems we have with any type of equipment on the fleet.
Chair.
After legislator on
deal with issues that are coming up.
Sorry. You had your hand up. Please.
Thank you, Chair Green. So I know I'm the legislator in the room who specifically had asked to leave the committee of jurisdiction on this. That doesn't mean I still don't have an opinion. I'll share what it is briefly. I think this policy, for the most part, is good. I do support the goal of cutting the tailpipe emissions, not just because of the pollution impact, but also because the accessibility of fossil fuels is increasingly constrained and increasingly dangerous to access, and then finally the climate causing concerns related to that. For all those reasons, we certainly need to get off fossil fuels, and not just in our vehicles. That said, I have grave concerns about the conversion of everything to running on electric. I think Deputy Executive Laval brought up a good point about problems with hybrids, and we're reading about car crashes where buildings are going up in flames because an electric vehicle, the lithium ion situation exploded. That just happened, I believe, yesterday in Columbia County and caused more death and destruction than might have otherwise. There are many such issues that we haven't dealt with on where are emissions being generated, for example, when you generate that electricity, and so are we just dumping our pollution on another poor community? I do think that the policy gives us an out, though, because it says, including but not limited to, and it names all these electric technologies, but it leaves open the possibility that we might do transportation in the fleet using some other means, and I would strongly urge us to explore what those means might be. And then finally, what this doesn't really contemplate, and is its biggest deficiency in my opinion, is the actual total consumption, that is from manufacture to the usage of other materials throughout the course of the vehicle's life. And we really need to be thinking about that, not just that as part of the green picture as well. So those are my thoughts.
Kind of along those same lines, I know that when we had the public comment on this during session, that one of the speakers, I think perhaps the only speaker on this issue, said that it's not really green if it's electric and the power generated is not from a renewable source itself. I personally think that electrifying vehicles is definitely the correct way to go, and I basically support this legislation, but I understand where those comments come from.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, first of all, I feel like electrification of vehicles is the way it's going, because so many manufacturers have already announced that they're not going to be making non-electric vehicles. I mean, big manufacturers, both American and foreign. The ideal is obviously to have the electric from renewable sources, but in New York State, we're not fully there yet, but a large percentage of our electricity does come from renewable sources already. And certainly I would say preferable to gasoline and the emissions associated. In terms of the fire risk, I think it's important that we separate out lithium ion batteries, the batteries that are in these e-bikes that cause fires, and electric vehicles. Electric vehicles have been studied and shown to have, a
radically lower risk of fire than a combustible engine vehicle. I don't know. I know there was a fatal fire. I think Philip said Columbia County. I saw it in the Freeman. I didn't know it was Columbia County, but from an electric vehicle. But I don't think the word's out on what actually caused the fire. Again, whether it was the battery, these batteries in electric vehicles are not the same exactly as the batteries that are in e-bikes, those small batteries that have been shown to cause flame. And again, there have been extensive studies that have shown a significantly lower fire risk with electric vehicles over combustible engines. You know, I think this is a necessary step, and I think we need to move aggressively toward greening our fleet overall. I also would like to see us really have conversations about enforcing the take-home vehicle policy, something that I think would have an impact, especially in a county where, I don't know about all of you, but the commute, depending on where you live, can be pretty extreme. You can put thousands of miles on a vehicle, and if it's a county vehicle, you know, you're doing it on a county vehicle. So we're going to have to also think about how that intersects when more and more county vehicles are electric. But you know, I appreciate the comments in terms of getting information out about any failings with electric buses, but I do think that's a separate issue than adopting really positive updates to a green fleet policy.
Mina?
Yes?
If I could. With regards to going electric and everything, I do think there's a conversation that we're never going to have that we probably should about how you produce these batteries, the mining that goes into it, the amount of carbon that's produced, where these batteries go after that, how much electricity can we even produce, what is going into producing that electricity. The true answer, I think, and Phil would probably agree, is in more of a localized economy, localized food production, localized recycling, and less driving. A smaller fleet, which we don't talk about. There should be no take-home vehicles, not just for green reasons, for almost anything. I mean, we've had arguments about whether there's sheriff's vehicles where people live and they get in their car at 7 o'clock in the morning and then they're ready to go somewhere. I mean, there's a couple of take-home vehicles where there's an argument to be had, whether you ultimately agree with the sheriff on that or not. But for the most part, even from a taxpayer standpoint, you know, but we never do it. We never do it. We never call the meeting. We never have the special meeting. We never look into it. We never do it. We never have any of these conversations. We never get down to it. We've been talking about these vehicles since I've been here. I'd be happy to sit on a committee to go over it. We never do it. We never do it. But I don't think it's as simple. And with regards to equipment breaking down and that being a common thing, that is apples and oranges when you're talking about electric equipment, new technology that we're just dealing with, and it's been happening a lot. Probation is another example. The probation director a couple of months ago sat right there upon questioning, and almost seems like they're nervous because 90% of the county is under the executive branch of government. They don't want to complain, but then I'm talking to probation officers, and their days were havoc. What they were able to do, the trek that they're normally taking, and the people they're servicing and visiting, they can't because they had a hybrid vehicle or an electric vehicle that couldn't take the ride. We heard it right here in a couple of different committees, and then I talked to some probation officers on the side. They agreed.
Is it a hybrid or an electric?
We'd have to go back to what vehicle was the problem, but they were handed a vehicle by us, by the executive, that wasn't working for them, and it was electric. The gas vehicles break down, diesel vehicles break down. For the most part, we work on them ourselves or right down the road. Now we're having these electrical vehicles break down, and it's software that is coming from China that we're now having to deal with getting. These are conversations we have to have before we blindly go full out electric. What's that? With the probation? These are, some of you may remember those conversations. They were just a couple of months ago. One of them happened with the outgoing, I think it was the last conversation we had with Mrs. Schmidt. And I've talked to several probation officers. I don't want to throw their name out there, but I'd be happy. I stand by what I'm saying. We go through the minutes or the recordings from a couple of months ago. The last meeting Ms. Schmidt was at, she'll tell you, they were having real issues. So my point is, shouldn't we be having these conversations? And there is some question marks about the environment and how much we're actually doing. We think we're doing. We're spending a lot of money. We're hurting our ability to service people through UCAT at times and probation at the very least. But full steam ahead. Everything's great. Let's do it. I'm a yes.
Are folks ready to vote on the resolution number 374?
Let's go.
Well, I just wanted to respond and say, in terms of the take-home vehicle policy, I mean, I wrote that policy, and I stand by the policy, and to my knowledge, it's not necessarily being fully followed. And we don't need a special meeting to discuss it. There's a committee that deals with fleet, and that's the place to have, if there are questions or concerns, that committee should be engaging in a discussion.
We've got time limits every... We're told we can't even... I've asked for extra meetings. I've asked for a day meeting, and none of it happens.
Right.
I'm
that
one legislator. It can't happen. I think the chair's got to step up with some of that stuff if we're going to have more meetings and special meetings. Some of these things may take 3 or 4 hours in multiple meetings. That's a special committee. That's a special subcommittee.
A committee chair can choose to make a special subcommittee if that's what's necessary, but that's definitely something that can be discussed in committee.
We have a lot of backlog.
I don't think we have a lot of chairs that are willing, unfortunately.
Things to get to, but I will make
okay.
a note. And
exactly.
another way to
perfect
handle
time.
It is to create, we've done this often on various different topics, to create a presentation with some experts and an opportunity for legislators to ask questions and get to the bottom of if it's a big topic like mining and the whole life cycle analysis. That's more than something I think we can fit into a meeting.
Thank you, Chair Green. And so I just, I agree that I think the green fleet policy and is a very admirable thing, and I think it's important that we try to strengthen it as much as possible. However, I do think that Legislator Maloney brought up a good point in terms of like these issues that we're having with the, with the technology on the buses. I think it's important that we look at, as we continue to make the fleet more green and take more fossil fuel vehicles off of the road, however, that we have a contingency in place and that the legislature is made aware of it in terms of when we do have issues like this, how are we going to rectify it in terms of being able to supplement the vehicles that are having to be taken out of commission because of whatever issue that they're having, how we're going to put a Band-Aid on that for the time being. So I think the legislature kind of needs to be kept in the loop on contingency plans for when and if technical issues come up with the new green vehicles as we're going more and more into more aggressive green fleet technology. So I think that is important that we come up with a, if it doesn't already exist, a contingency plan, and that the legislature is made aware of this so that we know what's going on when and if issues do come up. Thank you.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to restate that first the intent here of updating the law is to rectify the county's goals with that of the state's goals and the Community Climate Action, the Climate Act, bringing those into agreement. It's also strengthening that when available, we should be looking at those electric vehicles first for fleet deployment. I also just want to stress that in everything we do, we are looking for ways to reduce the need of using that, using efficient technology. It's much more efficient to have a vehicle that is right size for the job before you look at different types of technology. And there's a hierarchy of decision making that goes into this. And we do that, we're doing that right now through even a route study for transit as well as with our fleet manager. We also do it for buildings, frankly. So that's part of how we're going about our work. We've historically in the past, we've done training with departments about using vehicles. A lot of times we have found that it's been just lack of familiarity with the training
with the vehicle, how it works, what the mileage is, what the range is. A lot of times there are hybrid vehicles that also have gas engines, that's not usually a problem. You're not going to run out on the road somewhere. So we can look at what we're doing as far as training materials. And last, I just want to remind the committee members that there is an annual Green Fleet report that documents in many pages all of the steps and bumps of the Green Fleet implementation, but I will be looking to make sure that explicitly we cover reliability and backup planning in that report going forward. And as far as practically, as far as the bus fleet goes, we have enough buses. There's certainly buses that are that can be used in the fleet. There's we have enough buses that if certain buses are down, we have spares to cover that.
Okay. I want to call the question. Somebody is supposed to call the question other than me. And I just do want to say that I share the life cycle concerns about, I think we've done pitifully little to put renewable energy infrastructure in place compared to what is needed. So I share concerns about beneficial electrification of cars and buildings, but I do think it's the right thing to do, and we need to really focus on getting that infrastructure in place at the UCRRA, in and on county buildings, and really, put more emphasis on the generation. And I am concerned about the mining and who's being affected, et cetera. But with that, I would like to call for a vote on resolution number 374. I don't want to cut anybody off, but we've given this topic a lot of time, and we have other resolutions and reports to get to. Okay, so all in favor of resolution number 374, please indicate.
Need a motion to adopt.
What's that? I need a motion.
So moved. Second.
Okay, and then all in favor of resolution 374?
Aye.
Okay, and anybody opposed? Oh, you're not on the committee. I'm like, where's your hand? Okay. Motion carries, and resolution number 374 is approved by the committee.
Can I report out to you what I learned about 348 and 349?
Yes.
I confirmed that you could postpone to the next meeting without naming the date of the next meeting. If you schedule a special meeting, it can be on the agenda of the special meeting if you schedule it before session. Vicki confirmed that if the meeting is to be on Monday or Tuesday of next week, she would need to know by tomorrow, otherwise a 2-day notice. So you could just postpone this to the next meeting, and at the point that you schedule the next meeting, this will be on that agenda, and if it's before the next meeting's agenda, then you can move it at that agenda.
And just say again, who has the information and will be coordinating a special meeting?
I don't know that answer. I'm assuming Chelsea probably, but it would normally be the clerk of the committee would be reaching out to figure it out.
And does Chelsea have the application?
Yeah.
You do? Okay. All right. So.
And we'll get the letter that was requested earlier out as soon as today. Lori's working on it right now, so it may be done before the committee's.
Okay. We don't have a closure date on the advertisement, the invitation to apply, right?
I don't know, but it doesn't matter. I mean, I wouldn't even worry about that. Like, it's more about the direct outreach now. We're not talking about advertising before the next week. So.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that knowing, in other words, well, let's just assume there's no closure date right now.
I'm not concerned about a closure date.
In terms of scheduling things, it would affect them. I'm still not clear on what we're doing with
postpone.
The blocked resolution.
I'll make a motion to postpone resolution 348 and 349 to the next meeting, whenever that will be, even if it should be a special meeting.
On second?
I'll second that.
On the motion to postpone?
Aye.
Aye.
I disagree, but that's okay. And Joe, did you vote?
I agreed.
Okay. The motion carries, and okay, so that's postponed. And then now let's go to resolution number 381, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to accept grant funds for the Golden Hill Energy Project, amending the 2023 County Budget Department of Planning. I'm going to ask, this is to accept funds. I hope that we can stay focused on whether or not we want to accept the funds. And so a motion on this?
For discussion?
Yes.
Okay, but can we stay focused on this, please?
What your definition of focus is, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what you mean by that, but I had a question.
Okay.
We're accepting funds for renewable energy project. These are solar. What is the equipment that we're going to be buying with the funds we're accepting?
It's a 600 kilowatt solar photovoltaic system.
Yes. So we're going to own that system?
Please.
Did we have a second to the motion? That's what my question was.
For discussion.
Chair Doyle's discussion. Wondering about a second.
I'll second that one.
Okay. Did you want
to? I'll be happy to.
Yes,
if
please.
That's okay with the chair.
So I, with some trepidation, I always like to don't like to sit at the head of the table. Usually, you get extra work if you do that. So, if I may, legislator. Thanks, Chair Green. This is a resolution that essentially allows us to enter into a contract with the Department of Environmental Conservation relative to a solar facility that a grant that we were awarded for $1.6 million. It's on your agenda tonight, not for action, because we don't have a contract yet from the state. We're still awaiting that contract from the state. So it was postponed in the in the Housing Committee, and there was one change made to the resolution in the Housing Committee, and that's up from the second, whereas from the resolve, which was to remove.
You're talking about 3D what right now?
Yes, I am.
So we're not voting on this?
Our suggestion would be is that you're certainly welcome to, but it was postponed in the Housing Committee.
Did that go for 3D2 as well?
That's correct. But we wanted to make sure, one of the reasons we put it in from the executive side was to make sure that we could address any questions that you have, and so that's why we put it in. The thought being was this is not a simple action, and we wanted to make sure that the legislature had an ample opportunity to ask the questions.
So you asked to keep it on the agenda as if we were going to
vote
on it?
That's correct, please.
I would love to be able to do that on things that I have up as a legislator. Just say, you know what, leave it in the agenda right early on in the agenda so we can talk about it, because it always gets put at the back and the bottom. But that's nice. We did that. I like the idea of discussing it. Normally it would be later in the meeting. But,
so,
all right, let's do it.
The contract with the state will essentially be the county as the owner of the facility, and there are other agreements that are associated with that, which is in the next resolution, which is 382. So if my sense is that this literally allows us to accept the funding and amends the county budget, and then it pulls that money into the county budget. What we were proposing to do, I think, is putting it into a fees for professional services And the reason for that is that we would use that to essentially allow someone else to build it for us rather than carry it out through with the capital program.
So we're going to own the equipment forever?
We will, yes. But we'll own the equipment in a similar manner that we own the equipment associated with the composting facility that is at the RRA.
It's not on the part of Golden Hill that we own.
No, what we'd end up doing is taking an easement, an environmental easement across the facility as an ownership. So that would be our ownership as an easement.
What about upkeep?
Upkeep would be the responsibility of the project developer. So, if I may?
May, yeah.
If I may, the 382 lays out the agreements that would be there in the last whereas. It talks about the agreements that we'll need, which is one would be the maintenance and operation agreement, a power purchase agreement, and the necessary environmental easements associated with that. So we'll have a series of agreements with the project developer that essentially allows them to build the facility for us, meet the matching funds, maintain the facility as well. So that's how this works.
Chair Green, may I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Do we contemplate what happens if there are cost overruns? Will it be contractually laid out that the developer
will pay for any
overages?
We would essentially basically allow them to essentially construct the facility, and they would essentially assume any of the liabilities relative to what's not covered under the grant.
And if I may, second question would be, in terms of the power purchase agreement, is that something that's regularly done? We're allowed to sell power,
What would end up happening is that since we own the facility, we would sell the power back to the developer to reduce the cost of electric to those people that are in the facility itself.
Do we contemplate a time where we would no longer own it? Or are we going to own this in perpetuity?
I can get you that answer, but clearly it's the life of the facility, and I think Legislator Herner asked that question, and I haven't been able to research that, but we'll get you that answer. But certainly there is an opportunity that we would only own it for the life of the facility. That may depend on what the grant source tells us is the life of the facility, and we want to make sure that that's the case. One of the things that's interesting or complicating, depending upon how you look at it, is this is a relatively new use of these types of funds by the grant source, so that there's not a lot of guidance coming out of the grant source with respect to that. And that's why we've been waiting for an actual contract. We weren't even sure, quite frankly, when we applied that we'd actually be eligible.
I remember discussing this with you a year ago. I think we were at the college, and there was something, I forget what we were able to do, because it is not normal. I mean, technically, this grant was not meant to go on private property for a $1 billion developer. Is there other parts of this, if they didn't have this equipment on there, would they not be eligible for other things or something? Was there other grants that they couldn't get unless there was more green, if it wasn't a green project or something like that? I got to go back and listen to the other meeting we had.
I don't recall the conversation, but what happened since the time that we issued the RFP for the developer, the time that the developer began the project, which was begun as a solar, essentially a no fossil fuel use on the project, which is one of the county's goals and one of the county's indications in terms of its award. Since that time, the state of New York has actually changed what's needed for low-income housing tax credit purposes, in terms of what constitutes the proper pro forma as it relates to the energy efficiency. And they are literally where we were almost about 2 years ago. So the short answer to your question is they would be required to essentially provide a means to essentially not use fossil fuels at the facility. One thinks that one of the reasons that they made affordable housing eligible for these kinds of grants is recognition that they could use the money that's available for energy efficiency work rather than use low-income housing tax credit funding, so that they can make their low-income housing tax credit funding stretch further. And that's been a consistent theme that we've seen from the state, which is essentially is as the cost of developing low and moderate income housing has risen, they've looked to tap other sources of funding to but and be able to build the same number of units, which is basically the same amount of money.
So this is a new, we used, like you said, we weren't even sure we could get this. Was this a, did we go to Penrose and say, hey, would you like us to look into this? Did Penrose come to us and say, we can't do this housing without this, without
yeah.
these millions of dollars in equipment?
So I was with the planning department when we wrote
yeah.
the grant. This is Climate Smart Communities grant pool is something that we have eyes on every year to see if we can.
So it was our idea?
So when I reviewed the grant announcement last year, this was a brand new category for renewable energy on for housing, for public kind of housing. And I forget exactly the term that they used. But this is it was a category that had never been in the Climate Smart Communities program before. The difficulty being for Climate Smart Communities, it requires that the municipality owns the work. Even if it's not on our property, we have to own it. We have done similar ones in the past with the compost equipment. It does require execution of a climate change mitigation easement. We did that for the compost project. We were the first municipality to do it
that's
in
not
the
a,
state.
That's not a private developer, though.
But if they use that, though, for if they're funding electric vehicle charging stations, other types of equipment that might have benefit to the community, they happen to be on private property, they want to ensure that they can have access to that property, and that's what that easement does.
But my question ultimately is, would this project still be happening if we weren't giving, this is a billion-dollar developer that we're finding ways, right? They didn't do the demo. They didn't. They were going to pay us fair market value. Now they're not. Now we're giving them millions of dollars in equipment. Did they ask, it's a pretty simple question. Did they come to us and say, hey, can you go and get this for us? Or did we just say, hey, you know what, I bet we could get that for Penrose. I'm just wondering how it came about.
So
they're pretty straightforward.
So I think one of the things that we continue to look at this project is that there is a financial gap between essentially the real estate pro forma that is currently existing and the amount of funding that is in the capital stack. And so as we continue to look at that capital stack with Penrose, the idea of where we can find additional funding so that we can close that gap is something that we continue to look at. I believe that we approached Penrose recognizing the fact that they still had a financial gap relative to that. And I will tell you to this day, there is still a financial gap.
So we're going to be looking to find more money for them? Or could they still walk away even after we go through and start getting this grant money? I mean, according to you, so if I just understand what you're saying, because sometimes I don't know if it's, I don't understand it clearly, but Penrose is telling the county, you guys want housing, and there's still people are building apartment complexes everywhere, but somehow in this unique situation and this piece of property that we're basically giving them and preparing for them, they can't make it happen, even though they're billion-dollar developers that are making things happen all over the place in other parts of the country. But in this particular spot, for whatever reason, they have a financial, which we've given, I don't know if we've vetted that, what they're saying is this is what to make this project work and ultimately turn into a state or federal-wide lottery, so we're not even going to be moving a lot of county residents in necessarily and helping our housing crisis. But this is what we want to spend, and we are accepting that. Have we vetted it and said, no, I think you can? I mean, we've gone down this road. There were other companies involved. We went with Penrose, and now I'm hearing years later, we're still hearing from this billion-dollar developer, we still don't want to put any more money into this. We need this or this, and now we're out finding tax dollars for them. Is that what's happening? And they still may need more, so is there a chance if they don't get it, they walk away?
I can't tell you what... I'm sorry, were you finished?
I mean, if there's still a gap, there's still a chance this doesn't happen. I mean, it's taken years. I know people over in Kingston that keep telling me this isn't happening, especially with some of the things going on in the economy. So as we continue to spend money over there, get grants and find new ways to give millions of dollars to billionaires, it still might not happen, and then what happens?
So I think number one is the first part of that discussion is time frame has to do with the amount of time it takes to get local approvals.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're aware, or should be aware, that effectively we've been almost a year and a half to 2 years relative to essentially making sure we had the necessary approvals from the, Penrose had the necessary approvals from the state, which allows them to essentially move things forward. The other thing is that there are other applications that had to be done with respect to that in terms of funding applications and other sources of funding. So you're constantly building a capital stack. The idea of how long it's taking versus the complexity of the project is pretty common with respect to affordable housing projects of this size and scale with this kind of development budget. So that's the first thing that you understand. There is still a gap. I can't tell you what Penrose will do. I can tell you that they provided all of the necessary material to us and to the city relative to where they are in their current funding situation, where they are with respect to that gap, and how they're looking to close that gap using various other alternatives and funding means that are there. Penrose is certainly willing to come and speak to the Ways and Means Committee with respect to this and with respect to the proposal that's in front of us.
I have one yes or no question and a request. The request is that you supply what you've been shown by Penrose with their financials. I would request that you give that to us. Obviously, you have it. You're talking about a gap. There's large amounts of money going, us ending up doing the demo, even though we weren't supposed to, things like that, have all gone into this. You getting this grant is all us now approving this grant, all goes into this gap that you're talking about and these financials that obviously you've been shown. I don't know of anyone in the legislature chair, have you seen these financials? What Penrose is, Penrose,
yeah. Which committee was it?
I think they made it the Economic Development Housing
Committee. And they showed,
they talked at length about the gap and they...
What was the gap at that point?
I don't remember, but I mean, they went through the... We'd have to go back and look at what month it was. I was actually
okay, can you send that over? And at any point, has Penrose ever said to you or anyone in the executive branch of government that this may not happen? If there's a gap, it sounds like there is a point at which it doesn't happen. Is that a possibility that's been expressed at any point?
No. The thought being is that they continue to work diligently relative to where they are in terms of their funding. I have not heard anything from Penrose to suggest that they're not confident in closing the gap.
But if they don't close the gap,
well, clearly their funders are not going to fund a project that has a financial gap associated with it. They've already deferred their developer's fee. That's deferred. They've deferred a lot of the work that they've done. They've worked with the city in order to essentially get a fairly robust pilot. But I can't tell you what's in their corporate headquarters in terms of whether no-go is going to happen. I can say that there is a need to close the gap in order for the funders, essentially the lenders, to essentially lend them the money.
And, well, depending on what they wanted to put up and get the money, this is obviously they're not looking to take a lot of risk, and they're looking for us to take care of the risk aspect. Is there anything else in the hopper that you're going to be asking us over the next year to fund more of this gap?
There are things that have been promised that we're going to take positions in. One has to do with the signal and gate on Golden Hill. There's a signal and gate that's required on Golden Hill. The signal is
traffic
light by the administration for the existing folks on Golden Hill on Glen Street. There's a signal requirement within Penrose's work that has to do with some of that has to do relative to what the county has responsibilities because it generates traffic on Golden Hill as well. So if you look in your capital program, there's a capital program piece for Golden Hill that talks about signal and gate. We are looking at the Golden Hill water supply system. This county has funded water supply systems elsewhere in the county in terms, but it has not funded its own water supply system on Golden Hill. There are issues with respect to that water supply system, not only as it relates to Penrose, but also as it relates to some other public safety concerns relative to Golden Hill as well, given the age of the system and some of the age of the system of the city system that serves it. So we may have a conversation with you concerning what we have to do to make sure that we continue to maintain public safety needs relative to the Golden Hill water supply system. We own that water supply system. It is subsequent to the city's water supply system. So we actually take water from the city's water supply system and have the responsibility to distribute it in terms of our jail, our mental health facility, our 911 facility, and the nursing facility. It's all served by a county-owned subsequent system.
The old jail or the new jail?
Both. The old jail's not there.
Yeah,
but
what
new,
jail were you referring to?
The new jail.
Okay, but that's a separate piece of...
Yeah, that's served as well by the
okay.
by Golden Hill.
Okay.
It's same system. So an investment in the county's own water supply system is something that I think we need to think about.
I just have two questions. I was wondering if...
the pipe's under my house.
If decommissioning
house,
was included
yeah.
in these costs, like when these solar panels reach the end of their lifespan, are there decommissioning costs included in their estimates?
I haven't seen all of their estimates for that. I'd have to look.
Because I know that decommissioning can be a real problem
mm-hmm.
with solar installations elsewhere.
There is, as I recall from the maintenance agreement, there is a decommissioning argument in that maintenance agreement. I'll make sure that that's there.
Great. And my second question was, it's my understanding that the people who actually live in this facility are going to be the ones who will reap the benefits of this solar installation. Has there been any, two things. One, if the power is not all used, will we be able to like send that power back into the grid? Or
my understanding is that the system is not going to be big enough so that essentially the power would not all be used.
Okay.
But if there is excess power, the question is how do we recapture it?
Mm-hmm.
Then we can have that discussion.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also I was wondering if there was any study done as to like what the savings would be that would accrue to the residents of this facility using this solar installation.
With 200?
Eight. We did, and it was a year ago, so I'm not, I don't have this.
I mean, they individually pay their power?
No, they get an allocation of funding for their power. So within your rent, your utilities are included in your rent. And so these are master meter. So they get an allocation.
Does it lower their rent then?
It would lower their rent. That's correct. It would lower their electric utility bill associated with the rent.
And the utility bill is included in the rent. So, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So, excellent. Okay. Thank you.
I think I was recognized what you
said.
Thank you. So, Amanda actually answered my question, which was about whether or not we were foregoing some other eligibility, but because it was specifically for housing, I realize that we don't have other eligibility right now. But are we considering, this was a last year application, are
we
applying this year? We do? Okay, good. And what's this year's for?
Looking at the Bridge Street Bridge in Phoenicia,
mm-hmm.
Which the county's progressing the design plan for because of the community benefit and the flood resilience aspect of that bridge, I think it would be a competitive application up to the maximum, which is $2 million.
And one other question in terms of eligibility, are there other solar eligibility? I'm assuming you would have already dealt with if there were solar for county buildings or
other
county
buildings,
facilities.
The other application resolution that we have in here is for carbon neutral economic development that would apply to geothermal, solar, so we also have an application and allow us to apply.
Thank you for that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So I would say that there is a memo here from that we included in your work from Penrose, which is an 11-page memo which explains this structure. And I would also indicate that Penrose has offered to come up and speak. I would suggest that they speak to the Ways and Means Committee, but I don't want to bring them up for multiple committees, if that's the case, when we consider this.
I can coordinate that.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I think it would be really good for them to come and speak, and I can coordinate whether or not that would be Ways and Means or a joint committee meeting, but certainly the whole legislature will be advised, and if it is one committee, we can hold it in chambers if enough people want to come and be there. I found their presentation to be helpful. Two quick questions. The receipt of the money, so it's a $1.6 million grant, and I did not go through all the details of the, and again, we don't have the contract yet to actually look at. Are we holding the money and forwarding it to them, and they're going to, okay.
Yeah, it would be a reimbursement. It would be drawdown for reimbursement. So they would prove costs, and we would draw down for reimbursement.
And then I noticed somewhere in there it talked about the Golden Hill developer rather than saying Penrose. Is the contract going to actually say Penrose, or is the contract going to remain?
So the reason it's written in that generality is that we're not sure relative to the ownership, because the
family
of Woodstock is going to assume 51% ownership of the project. And the question then we had going back to DEC and others is essentially how do we structure this in terms of the owner, or whether it's a separate development corporation that's acting for family of Woodstock. So it's written in that way not to be confusing, but more to make sure that we weren't in trouble by naming a wrong owner.
And that'll be sorted by time of the contract.
And the difference between those two things could ultimately result in either the City of Kingston School District not getting their taxes, or they could.
No.
Family of Woodstock is a non-taxable entity.
No,
will that affect?
That's not correct. Yeah,
how so?
Let me explain. The Penrose folks have gone through first site plan approval and review at the city level with the planning board. There was an environmental work done. There was an environmental determination that the project would not have a significant impact on the environment. There was discussions and work with the City of Kingston Common Council. The City of Kingston Common Council has rezoned the property to allow the project to be built, basing their rezoning on public need and public benefit, and also on the fact that there is a negative declaration with respect to the environment. Penrose then entered into negotiations with the city as a housing development fund corporation, which is a nonprofit corporation that gets formed, that is eligible to essentially provide for funding for housing projects that are low and moderate income housing projects that are restricted by either the funding source or by deed restrictions to low and moderate income housing. They entered into something called a pilot negotiation. So there's a pilot negotiation out there. That pilot negotiation provides for the payments to the taxing authorities.
So they would get it anyways through a 501c, what is that? But that's a five-year, isn't there a five-year limit on that?
No, the pilot negotiation, I haven't, they're currently under negotiation.
Are you saying they're not going to be paying school taxes anyways?
No. They're going to be paying school taxes like any other nonprofit pays school taxes in the affordable housing endgame. They pay school taxes for the use of pilot payments in lieu of taxes. So the payment in lieu of taxes is worked out with the taxing jurisdiction.
But if the City of Kingston did it, aren't municipalities limited to 5 years?
No.
With those types of...
No.
So they have a forever...
They have...
They now... When did they work that out?
The negotiations were ongoing with the city for at least, I would say, at least 6 or 7 months. And they're still ongoing now.
But it hasn't happened yet?
They have an agreement in principle.
So it's just happening now?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. This was a different bill when we first got this years ago. It was the term I wasn't here, but they were doing the demo. There was no talk of them not paying their school taxes. There was no talk of these millions of dollars in agreements. And man, oh man, has that changed? Has that changed?
I have one question, or kind of a comment and a question, I guess. One thing that has been concerning me is the degree of reliance that the county is placing on Family of Woodstock. And I mean, they do great work, and you know, I think they're wonderful. I have no problems with it, but I am concerned, like I say, about how much reliance we have on this one entity. And if, God forbid, something were to happen to Family of Woodstock and they have a 51% ownership, what happens then?
So there's an ownership structure, and someone can correct me from Penrose if I'm wrong, but as I understand the ownership structure, is there's a management entity of which Penrose is the managing entity, and then there's an ownership entity of which 51% of the ownership runs to Family of Woodstock. But Penrose, with all of their management company and their management, they have like almost 14 or 17,000 apartments under management. That management company is responsible.
Okay.
Right. So Penrose, Family is an owner, but the management responsibilities could belong to Penrose.
So what is the purpose? What did Penrose tell you? Why do they not want to own a majority stake? What is the benefit for them to bring in a local not-for-profit and have them own 51%? It's starting to happen a lot. The Dominican Sisters are nice enough to own 51% of a project that might be starting out
in
Saugerties. Why do these rich developers like the idea of, I know some of it, they make a lot of money other ways, but what is the deal? Can we just get the straight deal, why they do it?
There are certain grant sources that are available to nonprofits and that are not available to for-profits. That would be my take on it. I'm not sure that that's Penrose's take on it. But if I was asked to explain this on a generality in terms of why you see it, and we've seen it in multiple housing developments, even the for-profit housing developments in the county. One of the most recent ones that I'm aware of, I think, is the one next to the Ellenville Hospital, which was built by a for-profit developer, and there's a 51% ownership, an ownership pattern that goes back to the hospital itself. But generally what they are, I believe what they are is there's an advantage in terms of the funding sources. That would be my take on it.
So they got 17,000 units out there. Wonder how many people in that company are making $100,000 a year, if not multimillionaires, and we're just giving them the world.
Statewide lottery. The other example I would give you is Woodland Pond,
which
is managed by a for-profit company. It's actually a non-profit entity.
Yeah, it's unsustainable, but what do we care?
I'm sorry, so this is the letter that's going on that we're getting? Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
So I want to thank you for the time and for the questions. If there are any more questions, please get them to me.
Have the contract next month.
I'm hoping I have a contract next month. But I will get an answer. One of them has to do with the decommissioning, and the other one has to do with the length of time, and then last was selling of any additional power. That's the questions I took away.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, please.
I would like to make a motion to block 381 and 382.
Okay. On the, do we have a second?
I'll second that.
All right, on the motion to block?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Okay.
And then I would like to make a motion to postpone 381, 382. 1 month, right? 1 month.
I just want to ask, is there a second on the motion first?
I'll second it.
Okay. Will postponing have any effect? Okay.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, great. Then on the motion to postpone, any opposition? All right.
I'm a no.
You're a no on
postponing. And
okay.
Hayes Clement in a City of Kingston meeting, it's a 30-year pilot, I just found out, and Hayes Clement in that meeting said, well, if they don't get it, then they'll use the family's not-for-profit. They've made up their mind they're not paying school taxes.
But just
we're
to be sure,
City of Kingston School District, yes?
This is not on the motion, it's on the motion to postpone. I mean, it's not on the rest of it.
I'm a no on postponement.
Okay.
I think we ought to just...
All right.
Down.
So the motion to postpone carries, and it is a complicated situation. There's no doubt, and I think it did
result in some good questions. So we'll take it from there. And moving on to resolution number 383, authorizing the Department of Environment to submit an application to the New York State Climate Smart Communities Grant Program regarding a consolidated funding application. And would you, or Amanda, would somebody like to speak to this, please?
I'll move it.
We have, yeah.
Yeah, got a motion. Motion and second.
Second.
Please.
We just actually chatted about this a moment ago. It is the time of year where the consolidated funding application is open, which are, you know, simultaneous applications and submittals to many different state programs. And this resolution would allow us to submit to the Climate Smart Communities program for 2023. That's the same program which we were awarded under 2022 for the solar. And we are very deep embedding the Bridge Street Bridge in Phoenicia as a project to pursue funding for. That project is a flood mitigation project in many ways, which will have restoration benefits to the community as well as to the businesses. So there's a lot of climate vulnerability, climate resilience elements to the plan. A lot of work with the community identifying that project as a high priority. Those aspects also help strengthen the scoring of it. In addition, there is considerable funding for that project, which will come through the Catskill Watershed Corporation, the CWC. That money is considered non-federal, non-state, which for a grant program like this is very valuable in order to have the necessary match for the project. So the match will be, we're looking at CWC money. It's an existing project that's already a capital project that the county is working on, and it would just be money to reduce the county share.
Any questions or comments? All right. Are we ready to...
can we call the question?
Please. On resolution number 383, all in favor, please signify.
Aye.
And anyone opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Resolution number 380. Okay. 384, authorizing the Department of Environment to submit an application to NYSERDA via the New York State Consolidated Funding. And again, do you want to just fill us in?
I'll make a second on that.
Oh, moved and second. All right. For discussion. And if you would...
Again, this is another opportunity available through the consolidated funding application, which the grant application is due later this month. This is for the NYSERDA Carbon Neutral Community Economic Development Pool, which is actually one we have not taken advantage of in the past. Looking at past awards, the city of Kingston had over $1 million, I think, is it in that range, for energy efficiency upgrades to City Hall. They were able to fund this through this particular application. Again, we're looking at ongoing, we're evaluating 368 Broadway and the Government Operations Center as the projects where we could employ this in order to meet our energy efficiency goals while using the service money to do it.
Okay, any questions or comments? I'll call for a vote on resolution number 383. All in favor?
384.
Anyone opposed?
384.
Oh, 384? Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah, the other one's checked off, sir. Correction, calling for the vote on resolution number 384, authorizing the Department of Environment to submit an application with NYSERDA. And now we'll take that vote on 384. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries. And then 385, approving the execution of a contract for $110,050 entered into by the county with Barton and LaJudice, Department of Environment. Anybody want to, well, let's get a motion to get it on the floor.
And I'll second it.
Okay. And anybody want to speak to that, please?
Sure. So this is a project that the Department of the Environment will be spearheading. It's kind of already, there's been a soft launch. We've engaged with the legislature and the county executive's office via a Bard graduate student class. Some of you may have participated in some of those sessions. Basically, it's estimated to be a $148,000 project. We applied for a Climate Smart Communities Program grant last year. And we're awarded $74,000 towards this. That funds 50% of the project. And the other funds are accounted for in this year's operating budget for the Department of the Environment. And then the other pieces would be staff match time are also accounted for. So really there's three components. The Barton and LaJudice contract, we awarded the contract to them through a procurement process we went through several months ago. The contract is routed internally. So Barton and LaJudice would be conducting some of the stakeholder engagement. That is really their primary focus. We're internally developing a stakeholder engagement strategy. We'll be forming a steering committee with multiple county stakeholders across departments and partnering community organizations. We'll be finalizing that stakeholder engagement strategy with this kind of broader steering committee in the coming months, and then basically working with Barton and LaJudice to implement that strategy over the next 9 months or so through a series of different stakeholder engagements, from which they'll basically develop priority greenhouse gas emission reduction measures across different sectors of greenhouse gas emissions at the community scale, and then establish, you know, reductions goals and targets associated with that and a plan towards implementation, and of course identifying relevant funding sources and other resources to help us get there. And then the other pieces of the project, I mentioned the Bard student project. You know, again, county staff has already been facilitating some early stakeholder engagement internally. And then the third piece is a smaller contract with ICLEI, Local Governments for Sustainability, to complete a community greenhouse gas emissions inventory, and actually also break that inventory down to the local municipal level so that all of our 24 municipalities also have functional greenhouse gas emissions inventories. They can use that towards Climate Smart Communities program actions, but they can also use it to develop more hyper-local specific climate action plans and reductions targets. So, any questions?
No questions?
Sounds good.
Then, hearing no questions, I would like to call for the vote on, see if I get this right this time, resolution number 385. All in favor?
Motion to adopt.
Did we have a motion to discuss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, it was a motion to discuss. Okay. So.
I was saying you and Eric.
You were making the motion to discuss, or the.
We made the motion.
We put it on the floor.
Yes.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on this?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor of 385?
Aye.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Motion carries.
Chair Green, can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
It's come up in Ways and Means before too, and it just occurs to me. I'm wondering, and I will bring it up to the clerk of the legislature. Something about, you know, our online backup for these for these meetings is very hard to navigate in real time. Like, it's really hard to scroll through 1,000 pages and
yes.
figure out where we're at. I don't know if there's a way to bookmark, but at the least, I think now it occurs to me today because of my interface with Legislator Levine that maybe we can, on the resolution, put page numbers for the OneDrive just so that when we get to resolution 385, it says page 295, and I know I can just type in 295 and quickly get there versus be scrolling, and not knowing as it's moving so fast where it's going to be. And that it's bad today because of all these long contracts, but in ways and means it can easily be a 3,000 page document, and I'm always asking to hold while I'm trying to get the backup. Sometimes I actually, unfortunately, even have it in hard copy because it's easier for me to get to immediately. So the thing I'm going to suggest through the clerk of the committee is that maybe we start to bookmark the pages, even if manually, in the agendas so that members can quickly just go to that.
I think that's a great idea. Thank you.
Well, I got the idea from using Legislature Levine as my bookmark today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I don't think we need to act on that, but it'll just be in the
minutes. Yeah, no, we don't need to act on it, but I just want to say it while I'm thinking it.
I also want to be sure everyone has a copy of the request to our colleagues, fellow legislators, that will also be CC'd, and maybe that could be added to CC.
Are we expecting another one, another version to the Supervisors Association?
Yeah.
I think if we just CC them.
Yeah, I said we could either just CC them or we could just do we could just send one to
if we can send it to each, I think that that'll be more effective.
Each supervisor?
You know, I think we should have a master list of all the town board members as well, and it'd be great to be able to send it something out to every person. I mean, we're legislators. A lot of times I know town board members that don't always agree with their supervisors, and they're not getting a lot of information most of the time either.
Or the town supervisor doesn't pass along to the,
exactly.
to the other members of the town board.
I will get to where I can immediately. That's a great idea, just in general. It'll be a good resource. But in the immediate, because this has to go out so quickly, I'll ask that it go to all supervisors, but I'll get to work on that right away.
Perfect.
All right. On resolution number 386, requesting enactment of a Senate bill and Assembly bill in the New York State Legislature to amend the membership of the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. And this is to change the membership. Please. Well, let's get it on.
She's moving.
That's
what she's doing.
Okay.
And I'll second that.
Okay. Please go ahead.
Okay. So, I just start by saying I have no intention of this moving this meeting. This is meant to be the beginning of a discussion. And there are some things that I actually really do want. Overall, I want feedback from the committee and the body as a whole, but there are some things that I'm not even set on in here. I just wanted to get something before everyone. This is something we've been talking about in varying forms for the whole time that I've been in the legislature. And it's also something that's come more to the fore in the last few months, but really the last couple of years, about an expansion of the board. One thing, so if we can walk it through, first of all, when the agency was created, there wasn't an executive form of government, so currently all of the agency appointments are chair appointments out of the legislature. That's because there wasn't an executive at that time. I've had this conversation with every county executive, every elected county executive, and I know it's something that they've all thought about in terms of their participation. So what I'm proposing as the beginning point of a discussion is expanding the membership from 5 to 9, keeping six of the appointments being county chair appointments, in keeping with the current, and then one remaining a minority leader recommendation. but one of the legislative appointments being right here, it has a sitting supervisor or mayor. I think we should have a conversation about whether or not we want it to be a sitting supervisor or mayor, or whether or not we want it to be recommended by the Supervisors Association. And then three of the appointments being executive appointments. In addition, it lays out the appointment times. In addition, it maintains the prohibition on county legislators sitting on the board. This is something I do think that we need to talk through. And again, I've been a part of these conversations over the years, and there's been strong arguments on both sides. I believe that some of our neighboring counties' authorities do have sitting elected, including sitting legislators. I'm highly attuned to the fact that the agency was created really to put a firewall up between the legislature and the agency in terms of the political difficulty of siting a landfill. We've obviously evolved, and there are other issues at stake here, but I do think that is a worthy of discussion. It's something that we have to have a conversation about whether or not we would want to have legislators sitting. Again, our neighboring agencies don't have the same prohibition that we have in our enabling. So, and I picked 9 because 9 seems workable, but I'm open to this being an open conversation and determining where it goes. But I really do think an expansion would allow for more stakeholders at the table, and I do think it's critical that we engage the Supervisors Association on the issue as well.
You go, and then I will.
Thank you, Sherdrine. I was just going to say I like the idea of going to the town supervisors and having them as a body nominate someone. I think that would get really buy-in from that group, which sometimes we don't necessarily count on. So I think that would be a smart thing for us to do politically.
And may I ask, just for clarification, do you prefer that it not be sitting supervisors or mayors, just someone recommended by the supervisors and mayors, or?
That's a good question, and I think it could be either. I think it could be sitting or someone that they, as a group, come up with. I think it could be either way. But I think having their input and feedback and them having skin in the game goes a long way to making this a true county effort.
I have a different take, and that is one of the upper board members, Jim Gordon, came and suggested that UCRA be dismantled and become a department. I think there's a bigger question, and I think the board is an issue, but this is something that has to go to the state. And if we're going to go to the state, we ought to know what we're planning for the future. And I'm not taking any position whatsoever, but I'm saying that I feel like this is it's a good suggestion, but it's a Band-Aid. I feel like we really need to understand what we're doing moving forward. And I had requested, and Attorney Gordon had looked up, there was a committee that was comprised of people from the agency, from the legislature, representatives of the public, and probably also the executive branch, to meet and look at the zero waste plan, look at the various documents that have been started and not finished that are sitting on a shelf, look at the local solid waste management plan, and collaboratively figure out what we're doing. And so
Can I just ask for clarification? You're saying there was a committee?
Yes, and can you help me?
Yeah.
I think it was called the Solid Waste Planning Committee.
No. Well, way in the past, there was a solid waste planning commission. That's not what at least I'm familiar with. About 2 or 3 years ago, we drafted a resolution and implemented a solid waste management commission, basically to oversee the solid waste management planning process that the RRA was doing.
We both sat on that.
That's right.
Yeah.
My recall is that it had 6 legislators and 3 RRA members.
But it was strictly focused on the drafting of the solid waste
management
plan.
Correct, and to a subsidiary extent, the zero waste implementation became an issue as well. But that was the point at which the solid waste management plan was being finalized, essentially, and the legislature had oversight over that. And that was meeting, I think, 2 years ago, and then or 3 years ago, and then it stopped 2 years ago. And I was in here when it stopped.
It stopped when the plan was completed. That's what happened. I mean, I sat on it. You sat on it. We worked together on the plan with the agency, and then the plan was completed.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main conclusions was that we would recommend to the legislature, I believe somewhere along there it had already passed the board of the agency, and it was that we would recommend that the legislature approve it pending the development of a zero waste implementation plan. So that's where it left off, and I'm not saying not to consider this resolution, but I want to look at the big picture, and I want us to start working collaboratively. I believe that Ulster County has the ability to be a model for New York State, but it'll only happen if we're all working together, and that was as close as I can recall to experiencing the different stakeholders putting their heads together. And
so Chagrin, you're suggesting that maybe we form some subcommittee represent some of these various groups.
I believe that was a subcommittee of the legislature, not a standing committee by any means,
right.
But it met regularly and had a common purpose. And I think if we can get representatives of the key stakeholders to do that, because we can't, you know, our meetings are long already. And if we're going to get that work done, I think there needs to be
a committee to examine the future of the resource recovery agency.
Well, to examine the future of waste management or materials management in Ulster County as defined in the local solid waste plan, and what recommendations that committee would make for moving forward, because we have a contract expiring in 2025, and if we're going to go to the state, we want to go to the state once. And if it's to amend the configuration of the board, then so be it. But I think we need to have a bigger conversation,
yep.
Please.
I don't necessarily disagree. I've talked to Tracy about it a couple of times, about really doing a deep dive with some kind of a special committee into the RA overall. And I get what you're saying about this is a major change, and there's other things that are problems, not just the amount of members and how they're selected. So we'd be trying to fix a lot of other things with a major change. Maybe we should I'm happy we're opening this conversation, and I have opinions on a couple of these things. But I really think it begins and ends with the lawyer over there. Can you imagine if we had the county attorney in here, and that's who we talked to when we were talking about, well, can we do this or can we do that? And we had the county attorney telling us what we can and can't do. That's why we have our own attorney. The IDA runs into big problems when they don't have bond counsel and board counsel. They really need board counsel. They don't have it. So you kind of have a lawyer over there that's not really the board's lawyer, and I think it's a huge issue. Nothing against the lawyer that's there, but you can't have all the same people using the same lawyer. How do we ever know who's in charge? And that's the biggest issue over there. Who the hell's in charge? What powers does the board really have? Does the plant manager run things? Does the director run things? So I think solving that before we send this off is something that doesn't mean we don't start working on this. I don't know if we jump right to 9. I mean, when you have a cluster, you know, a shit show of 5 people, adding 4 more, I don't know if that's going to fix the shit show. Let's just be honest. You might have a bigger shit show if you don't attack the other actual problems. And I really think that getting counsel for specific counsel for the board and having maybe you need 2 lawyers over there, one for the rest of the RRA and then one for the board. But I think the board really needs their own lawyer. I do not like the idea of the executive having anything more than one. I don't think the executive, anything that doesn't have to do with day-to-day operations, I don't think the executive should ever. I think we have some real issues in some other boards where, I mean, we walked around a horror show yesterday. I mean, it was a horror show. It was probably too scary to be the set for a movie. And that was politically driven. And when you give, when a body appoints people, like we'd like to with the IDA, the idea is that they don't just answer. It's not like I'm going to have 3 or 4 people on the IDA that I can call and be like, you know, this, I think this would be good if this happened. And those kinds of things happen. And when a powerful executive appoints people, those people end up working for that executive far more than they work for the body. It just happens. And with an executive branch of government on every level of the state becoming so political, I think sometimes it's not even intentional. I think what happened over there, you know, we had somebody running for Congress. They want housing. We got a handful of people doing a ton of things. They reach out to a couple of local people. You get a real estate agent, I got a great building for you. And before you know it, we have a mess on our hands. We do not need to bring that mess to the RRA and add more politics to a place that is already suffering from politics and confusion around who's in charge. So I don't like the idea of the 3 member. I don't think it makes any sense. I was so excited about this charter commission because I thought we could finally dive in and remove some of these appointments to non-day-to-day operations that have an executive branch of government that controls everything, human rights, ethics. And now we got to really rethink this three members from the executive. And I'm surprised it's in there. I don't know if we need to go beyond 7, but I do think it makes sense to go above 5. I think you've made a lot of good arguments for that. But it's a starting point. But I really think we should just address this lawyer thing right off the bat. I think we'd see some better results start to come out if everybody had their own lawyer. And use that as an example. Can you imagine Clinton here and us asking about a policy that... you know, it'd just be, we'd constantly be told, no, we can't do that.
Yes.
I mean, he's walking out the door, but I definitely appreciate the conversation. Again, I look to the model. Oneida Herkimer is a model that is regularly raised as a, they ran a parallel to us. They cited the landfill. It's a two county organization. And they have appointments, their appointing authorities are county executives and county legislatures. I think it's worthy of us having a debate about whether or not the exec gets appointments. I thought I was being conservative, just giving 3 out of 9 to the exec. It's, you know, even if the situation the legislator Maloney brought up happened, still only 3 appointments. I think to Legislator Stewart's point about skin in the game, I think that might be what you use, it is powerful. Like, again, having had conversations with all 3 elected executives, there definitely was a sense about not having skin in the game, about it being, you know, being a legislative agency with legislative appointments, and a little bit of a removal because of the lack of appointing authority. And I think that does not always work for us, but again, I'd be open to the conversation. In terms of the timing, I think it's really important that we start having this conversation now. This wouldn't, you know, the next session, right, we're talking about when do they convene, what is it, January? Or, yeah, I mean, I don't, I'm not even positive, but I think we're talking January. So basically, you know, I'm opening a conversation that we're not going to be moving this, not going to be considered by the state for 6 months from now anyway. So really, it's about having the conversation. I think that it would be a meaningful change, regardless of what else we might be doing with the agency. I have spoken with board member Gordon, and I brought up this idea, which he was very much in support of. You know, I think that I think the concept and the suggestion of making this a county agency is a serious and significant suggestion that I don't see happening anytime soon. Like it would take a significant commitment on the part of the county and buy-in from the executive, though not required, but buy-in from the executive. And there was a committee called the committee, I'm might be messing up the name slightly, I sat on this one as well, the committee to investigate the future of the UCRRA, which is interesting since it's basically exactly what you just said.
Right.
And it began with multi-volumes, and I have multi-bound volumes at home as a result of the findings. Carl Belfilio from ASOPIS chaired the committee. It was Richard Gerentine was the chair of the legislature at the time, and we were earnestly looking into whether or not to disband the authority and make it a county department. And at that time, there was a clear and definite and united, unanimous consensus not to do that. The thing that has changed, the most significant change between then and now is, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, I don't expect anyone to have them here now, but the amount of debt service that we would have had to satisfy outstanding debt at that moment in time versus this moment in time, I can only imagine was pretty significant. The agency was urged by a former legislature to refinance its debt for a short-term benefit to the legislature in order to not have a net service fee at a time when the legislature was facing double-digit tax increases. And so the legislature put pressure on the then agency saying, please refinance this debt so that for 1 year we have no net service fee. And the result of that was 30 years of higher debt service, you know, and extending out what would have been already paid years ago. So yes, it is really unfortunate. I was not on the legislature at that time, just for the record. I think that this, I have less concern about going to the state more than once. I think that this, in some form that we agree upon, after robust debate, which could take months, because this has been a conversation we repeatedly have about stakeholders and the question of whether or not electeds should serve, which again they are allowed in other agencies, and I'm right now agnostic on it. I'm not really sure where I stand, but I do truly believe that expanding the board a bit, not strictly more people by the same appointing authority, but expanding the stakeholders on the board will really change the investment in what we're talking about from these other stakeholders. Supervisors, the execs, everyone, there's a sense of it being somebody else's issue. And it's all of our issue. We all are affected by this, and I think especially on this committee, we all know what's at stake. And to the director's point in terms of holding off the big decisions, we've kind of been holding off the big decisions for a really long time. You know,
yeah.
It's like we're getting to the point where it's getting to the I told you so moment. And look what just happened last month in the legislature. You know, we voted to not cite in one community, and it's not gonna be the last resolution we have. There's gonna be another one coming. So we've actually got to do something. So again, I think it's important that we have this conversation. I know it's not going to move this month. It's probably not going to move next month. I'm not in a rush, but I want to actually be actively having this conversation in parallel to all the rest of the bigger things that are going to take much longer than 6 months to figure out, because I do think it will have an impact.
Did you have your hand?
Yeah.
And I want to go next.
Thank you. I just wanted to observe that it, as far as the worry over executive buy-in, it seems to me that if the RRA were to return to a county, become a county function, then by definition, the executive would operate it, and so it would, they'd be all in.
I think that's why they've been, it's a heavy lift.
Yeah.
It's
the third rail.
I want to bring up something that I've heard from various different people. And as I'm encouraging people to, if there are people they think would be good to serve on the board, to encourage them to apply, this has come up more than once, and that is to consider a stipend. I believe that there is a board member who would have considered either staying on the board or coming back to the board, but that person is getting paid for other work, and they'd have to give up the other work to be on the board. We as legislators get a stipend for the time we're elected, not appointed, but if we're going to be focusing on changing how the board is set up, maybe thinking about a stipend would, but I'm concerned that we're focusing on administrative issues, which are important, but we're not focusing on that bigger picture, and I really want to find a mechanism to do that. So I'm hoping that that committee, that
the commission, because it included
that was focused on the local solid waste plan.
Yeah.
I some form of that. Doesn't have to be exactly the way it was set up then, but I do think that then we can just report back what that committee has come up with, and maybe find a way to combine the work that was done by the Solid Waste Management Improvement Committee and the Zero Waste Implementation Planning Process, and work with the agency and get their input, and see if there's a way to stop talking about planning and get a plan. Yes, please.
I'd just like to say that the idea is good. I mean, I suggested it a couple months ago, but of adding more people. But also what you need to do is, like I said before, is the contract. This contract that we have that should have been redone when they got flow control. And like I said, if you read through that contract, there are paragraphs of stuff that doesn't apply. There's paragraphs of stuff that the agency is supposed to do, and we don't. And I double-checked back with some of the administration to see what we're doing and so forth. But you really need to put a whole ball of wax and make it a contract that works. And to be perfectly honest, if I was writing a contract, I'd make it so that just when it comes to the landfill, that if the DEC said the landfill could go, the Resource Recovery Agency found a place where the landfill could go, and the DEC and EPA said it could go there, the legislature would have no say in it, because I understand, but because otherwise you're never going to have a landfill in Ulster County.
Well, I think the chair and I agree that that's absolutely primary for a successful materials management program. Yes.
So this is obviously a very near and dear topic for the director of OGRA. I have had conversations with a few of the committee members and with Chair Brickhill on this issue as well, and I think pointed towards, or not yet heard from some of our conversations, that I thought their model seemed to work very well for them, and if you have a model that you can tell worked over a period of time, it's worthy of looking at to see if maybe you can duplicate that, especially if you have a model that you feel is not maybe living up to your expectations. So I've heard several themes here, some of which I actually wrote, actually knowing this was going to be talked about tonight. I actually made myself a list of things that if I was to speak, I would mention. But I think one of the things that I heard here that I would just say is that the role of the board needs to be defined. Because I just heard Chair Green mention that, you know, hey, there's this subgroup or whatever that was put together that worked on the solid waste management plan. Well, it seems to me that that's what your board should be doing. They, not necessarily working on it, but they should be overseeing the work that's being done by the individuals at UCRA. So when you're appointing your board and when you're trying to develop what this is going to look like, that should be in mind. It shouldn't be that there has to be a separate committee put together in order to do this stuff by the legislature. This should be part of the board's role. Because the reality is that I was hired to be an expert and help guide the county towards these things. And I do know how to do these things, okay? But obviously you want oversight over me. You don't want me running loose just doing whatever, right? That board needs to be appointed and given some very clear direction of this is what we expect you guys to do. And then where you were talking about who's in charge, the board doesn't need to manage UCRA. The board needs to be oversight. They need to be part of the vision and the mission and the overall picture. And if that picture is getting us a landfill sited and getting us a better mousetrap to get maximum diversion, that should be what they are overseeing and making sure I'm doing, or get rid of me and get somebody in that can get them there and help you guide that. So that's what I would encourage you guys to think about as you talk about this. And by all means, I'm going to ask and beg that as you guys continue on with these conversations, please ask me questions, include me in the conversations. I am happy to discuss this, and you don't have to listen to everything I say, but I would appreciate a chance to at least give you my insight, because I think my chair I sit in and what I've seen in the short time I've been here and what I've learned in the history, I think it could be very valuable.
Thank you. I think inadvertently you're supporting what the chair is proposing.
I do. I support making a change, yes. And I suggested it. I don't think I'm the first one, obviously, to suggest it. But I actually did suggest that there be a change. And I didn't suggest the specifics that she put in. And I may or may not agree with every single one of them. But I think a change is needed. But I think as you make that change, rather than thinking about additional committees to help steer UCRA, it needs to be, the change needs to be made, and with the thought process of how we form the board and what the mission of that board is. Because if they have the correct mission, you don't have to worry about this anymore. You solve the problem by giving them the correct job and ask them to do it, because then they're going to drive it the direction that you expect it to go.
Okay, I think for now, this was to start a conversation.
I just have one quick comment and question, actually, for the chair. I had reached out to Director Olivier about how I thought it would be good for him to address the legislature as a whole, to kind of explain the process about what would be entailed in siting a landfill site, and in light of, you know, what happened with the whole Plattekill thing, and then how Orange County injected themselves into our business. You know, I thought that having him kind of explain to the whole body, you know, what that process is would be very helpful. And I was wondering if that is something that you think could happen at some point. So
I can respond. Yeah. So I think at the time when I spoke to Director Olivier, there was a little bit of confusion because our communication led me to believe that it would be to talk about appointing board members, which didn't seem appropriate.
Which
but
which
also that meeting,
right,
as you pointed out, it ended up being fortuitous because that meeting was so long anyway.
Yes.
But I do think that there, you know, that there is a definite value in having and maybe even the three of us could get together. Just because your suggestion,
sure,
and your vision, and we could talk about, you know, I know that Director Olivier's been meeting with supervisors and working on strengthening those relationships, and it also probably is not a bad time to actually engage the legislature as a whole and sort of place us contextually in what actually is or is not happening related to
right.
Landfill siting and the bigger vision pictures. So maybe in the short term, probably not for this month, but before
sure.
you know the end of the year, I think it would be a good idea.
I think that's great. And like I said,
and whether
I
it's
don't
a special meeting or session, you know, sessions get a little crazy, or maybe we do it on caucus, at a caucus
right.
day at the first Ways and Means meeting. We have a a special informational meeting pre-caucus. Like
I just think that would be a good thing because that way, it could allay a lot of people's fears, and there's
yeah.
a lot of people jumping to kind of crazy conclusions.
I agree.
And I thought it might be a good kind of public relations thing.
Yeah, and I'll speak to the board, the chair of the board's here, but I'll speak to the board members about it as well.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
So with that, I want to apologize particularly to Department of Environment because you had a long meeting to sit through to give your report, and at this point I'd like to call on Director McGovern, interim director?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. So I'll just speak to the couple of bullet items here in the update that we at the department are currently working on and engaged on, and then I'll defer to Amanda for a couple of the others that are more relevant. So I'll just jump to the Reuse Innovation Center planning study. So I guess I'll just start by explaining that Reuse Innovation Centers are envisioned as facilities that divert priority materials from the waste stream. Kind of ties into a lot of the discussion items today. They're really one solution towards broader waste diversion goals, right? And so those priority materials might include things like textiles, large appliances and white goods, architectural details, other materials that are in the C&D waste stream. And so, again, it's not a solution for, it's not a solid waste facility, rather a facility that is diverting materials ideally to further upstream, say source separated, is much more preferable, right? Than pulling things off the tipping floor, say Accra or the other 19 transfer stations in the county. So just so that we go into this so you understand the concept of what a Reuse Innovation Center is. So basically that's a capital project that's open right now. We hired Sustainable Hudson Valley as the lead consultant to complete the project deliverables. They'll be finishing up in mid-fall, October, November of this year. The project is well underway. Many legislators here have been engaged in some of the stakeholder working sessions and Zooms that Sustainable Hudson Valley and their lead consultant, Dave Benick, of Reuse Innovation or Reuse Consulting have been conducting. One key thing I wanted to mention today was that there will be in-person working sessions in late July. I think it's July 24th. They haven't publicly circulated them yet, but there's two. One that relates to legislators here in particular would be a working session that'll be held via the Recycling Oversight Committee of the legislature. So we've been in touch with Chair Petit, and I think the idea is that will pretty much be the sole agenda item for the ROC meeting on July 24th. So I think it's anticipated to be something like a two-hour in-person session, probably in this room where those committee meetings are usually held. So I'll when we send out the ask to Chair Petit, I'll make sure to ask that other legislators are also informed of that one, because again, that's a really key point in the project for very important stakeholders.
And
like
this is recycling?
This is for Recycling Oversight Committee. Yes. And then the second in-person working session around the same time will be via the Resource Recovery Agency. We've been working with Director Olivier and his staff who have been very amenable and collaborative on this project with our consultants and with our staff, and we'll be scheduling an in-person working session with them as well, because obviously UFRA is a key partner, not necessarily the only partner for this project, but we want to make sure that what our consultant is ultimately recommending in this final conceptual plan and final report is indeed implementable, and to the extent that UCRA can potentially be a partner or support it, we want to make sure that we've outlined that path towards implementation. So really this is phase one of a broader project to get it actually up and running, because this is just the planning study phase.
Yeah, I think it's important to think about how that also fits in to the bigger plan. And I'm sorry, I actually had a specific question and went right out of my head, so please continue. It'll come back.
Sure. So does anyone have questions about that project before I jump topics? Okay, so the next thing, I just wanted to briefly mention the BARD student climate project that relates to the broader community climate action plan that I referenced before in relation to the Barton and Wajudis contract. So again, we'll be forming the steering committee, a broader county level and community scale partners soon. And again, you'll see more communications about that project in the coming months.
Just so I don't forget again, I think one of the things to think about with the Reuse Innovation Center is how it will be funded. So we don't need another study. We have reports and studies that are sitting on the shelf. If this is going to happen and make a real difference in terms of climate change, we have to also think about how a facility or facilities like that will be funded. I think ultimately they will pay for themselves, but there's going to have to be some initial capital investment, and I just want to be sure as we're talking about that, the agency board and the legislature and anybody else who needs to is thinking ahead about that, because when that project was envisioned, it was to do the feasibility study this year and to actually construct next year. So.
Yeah, I was just going to echo that and say that, you know, I think you said October, November, so it's like it's tight in relation to a proposed budget. Like, I don't know how much of a jump or how much of a window into that you could get in advance of this budget cycle, because in anticipation, and it's also something you're reminding me we should be flagging for the executive for, and maybe Europa, you can too, for thinking about in relation to the capital plan for next year.
But that's an important question, is this something that is developed by the agency, and assuming that the whole project is probably going to exceed the agency's limit to bond without coming to the legislature.
I'm agreeing with you that I think we should be having these conversations and also thinking in terms of our own capital, but speaking to the agency about it as well, depending on what comes out.
And may I add that, so that's part of the contract deliverables for that final report, is proposed ownership model, operating cost estimates, staffing needs, things like that, because I think we don't have the answers yet, whether we're looking at a county-sponsored or hosted facility, or if we're looking at a private entity that somehow the county supports to get up and running.
Right.
I mean, that's why they have Dave Venick, this Reuse Innovation Consulting, on the project team, because he's really created the model and gotten 6+ of these things up and running around the country. And apparently, from what we've heard, these things can start making money in year 2 or 3. But again, until we have that final report and recommendations, I don't think we have the answers either.
Thank you for the work and for shepherding. It's very exciting.
And I'll defer to Amanda for the other items.
The only update I have to share is that the City of New York has decided that they will not be going forward with the shutdown, the tunnel shutdown this season. So that was kind of a large event for them. They've been planning for this and doing work for it for decades, but this is part of the things that we've been talking about, which would require kind of a rebalancing of the system in order to try to maintain the water supply during the time that the Delaware system is offline. So that will not be happening in 2023.
Just out of curiosity, what spurred that decision? They're just scared that there'd be a problem.
June was a pretty dry month.
Yeah.
They had a number that they had to be at in order to be within the confidence range in order to be able to supply water, not using the Delaware system, and it wasn't there.
If we're okay with this, I would like to ask, I have never seen the final report from the BARD students, and I wonder if we could get a copy of that, because they they did a lot of work. Some of us worked with them, and I'd like to see what they finally came up with.
Again, we see it as kind of one component, right? An early and key stakeholder engagement that was facilitated, and then that's going to kind of feed into the next steps in the process. But if there is a final report, I'll make sure to share it.
Okay. And do you have a question or an update on funding for local watershed groups? I kept that under this topic.
I spoke very briefly with Amanda just at the start of the meeting, and as you know, we've decided that funding for the local watershed groups, I had sponsored resolutions earlier along these lines. That's going to be coming through the Department of the Environment, and specifically through the Water Quality Coordinating Committee. And Ben Gannon heads that up, and he's a super nice guy and competent, and I look forward to working with him. There's some question as to actually how much funding and bandwidth the department can be able to provide. And if I'm saying things wrong, please let me know. But it's my understanding that that these groups will be funded through the water quality control.
Okay,
did I do okay?
Good enough.
Okay, I want to just go back to resolution number 386. We can simply take no action, or we can vote to postpone.
I'm fine with taking no action.
Stay on the agenda. Okay. I just didn't want to leave it on
a
loose end.
Can I ask, though, just I know Legislator Maloney raised some thoughts, concerns, but if I can ask the rest of the committee to think about it and reach out to me whichever way you want, because I do want this to be an ongoing conversation, and maybe we could talk about it again next month. I do think it's not a rush because of the schedule of session, but I do think it's going to be a meaningful, potentially interim step. So I just want to, keep it out there versus the idea that we have to have one overall fix and wait for just one request. Like, I think this bigger overall fix may take a little longer, and I think it could actually be very meaningful to make change sooner. So I welcome everyone.
We'll keep it on the agenda. I want to figure out how to do so efficiently, and also I want to just put a plug in for a special committee like.
We can talk about that.
Okay. And is there anyone here to just report off on the Environmental Management Council? Okay. If not, I think we've gotten through.
You have the forthcoming resolution.
Oh, but that's forthcoming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always think of that as sort of for our information, but if people want to discuss resolution number 433,
briefly, I just like it as an opportunity to know.
Yeah. So.
Yes, please go ahead.
I'll put that forward for discussion.
For discussion. And a second.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Let's say what the resolution is, but not everybody might have it in front of them. Urging the government of the state of New York and the United States of America to establish fossil-free state and federal public transportation. I personally think anything that has public money should address climate change, but go ahead.
Well, thank you, Chair Green, and the committee for entertaining us. I'm looking for another sponsor, either from the Republican caucus or enough from the Democratic caucus, which is why this didn't go in for this month. But please take a look. You'll see that it addresses a number of things. As the title suggests, a fossil fuel-free transit system because we do need to stop burning fossil fuels post-haste in general, is my opinion. I hope that you share that opinion, but if not, I hope that you will consider the socioeconomic equity motivation behind this, environmental justice, national security, and public health and safety. All of those are factors as to why I think we need public transportation far and wide throughout the state and nation, and it will benefit us directly here in Ulster County if we have it on the state highways and perhaps on the freight railway that exists, perhaps along the waterways. The sky is the limit, if you will.
Literally. Yes.
I was wondering if you could just kind of explain the second to the last resolve where it calls upon state and federal governments to negotiate and legislate the public's right of access to private transportation infrastructure. How do you foresee that working?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So for the first example I give is freight railroad. The freight railroad that operates on the west shore of the Hudson River, for example, sends about 200 trains through Ulster County every week with, to me, little if any benefit to our county. It's polluting, it's noisy, it's dangerous as it comes through our communities. Well, maybe we can address some of those concerns by asking Congress to allow passenger rail on those trains and on those tracks. So we have 150 car trains, and if you just replace two of those, let's say, with passenger, then that's 200 trains a week, 100 in each direction. So what is that about? You got about 15 trains a day coming through our county that could stop in all the hamlets and along the way. So basically one every hour and a half. And that's one way that could work, but of course it requires negotiating with the railroad, which is privately owned, and the whole thing is privately owned right now. And that's under the federal government's jurisdiction. On a state level, we might be talking about a maritime transportation system, and then also the fact that right now, for example, in northern Ulster County, we have a bridge across the Hudson River that hasn't ever had public transportation on it, to my knowledge. The last time that you could cross between northern Ulster and Dutchess on some form of public transportation was in the late 1950s or so, when there was last a ferry. And the river doesn't belong to the private sector, it belongs to the people. So there should be a way for the people to get across it. And maybe the State Bridge Authority can help us out, or maybe there is some other way. But I know I got a little off there, but the railroad example, I hope, gives you one sense of what I meant by working with the private sector.
Okay. Joe? Oh, did you have your hand up? Right.
I just waved at Vicki.
I just think for the passenger that's going to be a much slower, you know, stopping along the way, and then the freight trains are more high speed, so I don't know quite how well that would work out.
And I'm sure there's different safety regulations.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. The one thing on the agenda, we certainly mentioned the zero waste plan and touched on the Climate Smart Committee. There was one other thing that came out of the Climate Smart Committee, and that was a request for a smart Climate Smart Schools Coordinator. And right now the recommendation is to see if BOCES would fill that role, and the county executive is in communication with the director at BOCES, and but we're not going to let it drop one way or another. It's an important role to be filled. Some of us have been meeting with our superintendent of schools, and there are various initiatives. Some are significant, some are pretty minor. There is a group out of New Paltz that's trying to help the schools coordinate and learn from each other. But I think there is a real need, and so we'll see where that goes.
I did send an email to the county executive about this yesterday, and inquiring as to whether, you know, she had the opportunity to meet with the head of BOCES and how that meeting went. And this was on your recommendation. And so, anyway, I haven't heard back from the county executive on that, but I mean, I didn't really expect like instant gratification there. But I also wanted to just give a shout out to Director Olivier, because his office was very helpful in discussing the Climate Smart Schools initiative and offered assistance with that. And also a big shout out to the Department of Environment's Climate Corps,
yeah.
And Nassim has been awesome, and so I just wanted to say thank you for your efforts, both of you, for your efforts not only with the Climate Smart Schools but also with the fair. So many thanks.
We have people trying to get in here.
Yes.
So thank you. I think that covers everything. The one thing that we never get to is redeclaring a climate emergency. In a sense, the county executive's executive order, but that's why I want to see what the students came up with, the BARD students, and let's see if we can really make some time next agenda. But for now, if there's no other issues, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone, and meeting is adjourned.
Thanks so much.